So let's begin here. Daniel is the central person in the book of Daniel. Daniel's name, Daniel, means God is judge. He was a teenager when he was carried away by King Nebuchadnezzar into Babylon. He was from the area of Judah, or from the tribe of Judah, Daniel 1 and 6. He was of the king's seed, Daniel 1 and 3, meaning Daniel was of the royal seed of the king. He was very intelligent, and the king wanted to use him and other very intelligent young Hebrew boys to teach them the Chaldean language so that they could in turn communicate to the Jews back and forth. And so this was one of the reasons for training them. Okay, Daniel may have been a eunuch because it was predicted in Isaiah chapter 39 and 7 that the sons of Judah will be eunuchs in the king's palace. So we don't have any record in the Bible of Daniel ever marrying. We don't have a record in the Bible of Daniel ever having children. So it's very possible he dedicated himself completely and totally to God, to the work of God, as a servant of the Most High God the entire time he was in Babylon. Daniel had three friends. They were trained for about 3 years, Daniel chapter 1 and verse 5. And then finally they were sitting at the king's table. Now the thing I like about Daniel, he's one of my favorite people, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. Because Daniel was not a compromiser. When they told him not to pray, he prayed anyway. When they told his companions to bow and worship an idol, they refused to bow. When in Daniel chapter 1, when he was at the king's table and they were offering him wine and meat sacrificed to idols, he said, I'm not going to eat it. And even though he was in Babylon, he wouldn't compromise. You know, people today say, well, you know, I'm out here and nobody sees and nobody's watching and I'm in this country, so I'm going to have to do as they say, even though it's against my convictions. Daniel would never compromise. And look what God did with this man who would not compromise. He exalted him eventually to be like the one of the leading men in command during the time of the Medes and the Persians Empire, which was many years later. Now, Nebuchadnezzar also changed their names. This was a common thing to do when you captured people from another country in the ancient time. You would take away their name and their identity of the nation they were from and give them a new name and a new identity. Now we have a list here and I want to show this to you. Daniel, his name in Hebrew means God is my judge. His Babylonian name was Belshazzar, and the meaning of the Babylonian name was treasurer of Baal, or an idol god. Then Hananiah, whose name means God is gracious in Hebrew, his name is changed to Shadrach, meaning messenger of Aku, Aku again being an idol god in Babylon. Mishael, whose name in Hebrew means who is like God, is given the Hebrew name, I'm sorry, given the Babylonian name Meshach, and his name in Babylonian means who is Aku. And then we have Azariah, whose Hebrew name means God has helped. His name is changed to Abednego, which means worshiper of Nego. So we have the men who are Hebrew, they're giving these pagan names to them, honoring the idol gods of Babylon. Now I'm going to tell you something I love again. Daniel's not a compromiser. I want you to check this out. In the book of Daniel, he never addresses himself as I, Belshazzar. He always says, I, Daniel. As a matter of fact, Daniel is mentioned in the book of Daniel 75 times. Now, while the king might use his Babylonian name, Daniel himself never used his Babylonian name. He always addresses himself by his Hebrew name. And I think that's very significant because he did not want to be attached with an idol. This is the way this man was. I just love this guy, the way he was a total, just solid, stood firm, non-compromising. All right, now let's look at the book of Daniel itself. We're going to give you a little bit of history of just the book itself. Okay, here we go. The book of Daniel itself, Daniel was written in Hebrew in chapter 1 and also chapter 9 through 12, but it was written in Aramaic in chapters 2 through chapter 8. Now, there's a real controversy as to why part of the book is written in Aramaic. The Aramaic of that particular day that the book of Daniel was written in was the common language of the area among the Gentile nations. So it may be because Daniel is prophesying in chapters 2 through 8, and he deals a lot with Gentile empires, he may have written this in the Aramaic language to get it out to these Gentile nations and empires, the things that were going to happen in the very near future. Now, Daniel deals with not just four, most scholars have said four, that he dealt with Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, and Rome. He actually deals with five empires. Now, four of them he sees through symbolism very clearly, but one of them is the fifth empire, is what I call the empire of the Antichrist, which is the little horn that rises up among 10 kings at the end of days. So in reality, Daniel not only saw the empire of Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, and Rome, which we'll talk about in a moment, but he also saw the very end of days, that last empire coming to power, which was a little horn with a mouth speaking great things, who would be the Antichrist that would have 10 kings under him. So in reality, Daniel saw five empires, the last one being the empire of the Antichrist, which lasts for 42 months. The prophetic time frame that Daniel covers is 2,600 years of history, beginning with Babylon toward approximately the end of days. Daniel also writes five times that he talks about the time of the end, which is a Hebrew phrase meaning the time prior to the Messiah returning to earth. Daniel 8:17, Daniel 11:35, and also verse 40, chapter 12, verse 4, and also verse 9. So Daniel lived there in Babylon. Now remember, he lived in Israel for until he was about 17. So he goes over to Babylon, probably lives there about 80 years. That's an estimate, but probably about 80 years. Now we have four kings mentioned. Two are Babylonian and two are Persian kings. Now watch carefully. Daniel comes in under King Nebuchadnezzar, and chapters 1 through 4 deal with King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Then we have a king by the name of Belteshazzar, and this king comes in, Daniel chapter 5 and also chapter 7, 1 and 8, 1, and he's a Babylonian king. And then, King Belshazzar. And then Cyrus comes in Daniel chapter 6, 28, and also Daniel 10 and 1. He's a Persian king. And Darius the Mede is mentioned in chapter 6 and also Daniel chapter 9, 1 and 11, 1. So you have two Babylonian kings and two Persian kings. And imagine this, you go in at 17 years of age, you're there for 80 years, and you live through four major. And we're just talking about the ones listed in the book of Daniel, not other ones that could have been for a short period of time. They say that one ruled just a few months, but we're talking about the four major kings mentioned there in the prophecy of Daniel. Now, Daniel has numerous events predicted that are parallel to the book of Revelation. And I'll keep emphasizing that throughout this teaching to help give you a fuller or better understanding of this book of Daniel. All right, compare the first four chapters of Daniel with the book of Revelation. Now, watch carefully. In chapter 1, Nebuchadnezzar invaded Israel to take Jewish captives to sit at the king's table. In chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a prophetic dream of a metallic image and sees 10 kings at the very end of days represented by 10 toes on the foot of this image. In chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar talks about the worship of an image and death to anyone who will not bow down to worship this image that he has built and that he has made. Then in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar has a 7-year nervous breakdown. And this is, I believe, connected to the worshiping of the image and the idolatry. But at the end of 7 years, everything gets restored completely back to him. That's chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the book of Daniel. Now, you've heard me talk about this for years, Ecclesiastes 1, 9 through 10. The thing which has been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. And there's nothing new under the sun. So what I want to show you is this. If you look at the first four chapters of the book of Daniel, and then you come and look at book of Revelation, where it talks about the Antichrist and the beast, it gets very, very, very interesting. Okay, watch this. In Revelation chapter 13, 1 through 2, there is a beast that unites a 10-toed empire. These are the 10 kings that Daniel saw in the book of Daniel through Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. Then in Revelation 13, 11 through 16, there is an image made of the Antichrist, and men are told to bow down and worship it. Hey, that is exactly what happens in chapter 3 of the book of Daniel, that the king builds an image and commands people to worship it and tells them they're going to be killed if they don't worship this image that Nebuchadnezzar has built. In the book of Revelation, if men don't worship the image of the beast, they are killed by beheading. And then notice in Revelation, we find out that the beast kingdom, and this is all the way through Revelation 4 through 19 when we read all of it together, the beast kingdom lasts for 7 years, 42 months and 42 months. Now, Nebuchadnezzar has a 7-year breakdown, which is a picture of the 7-year tribulation, where he lives like a beast. He's a beast. He's a wild man. He's an animal living in a field, just like the Antichrist has this animal-like nature, this terrible nature possessed by a spirit. So if you look at Daniel 1, 2, 3, and 4, especially the prophetic part of chapter 2, which is the 10 toes, chapter 3, which we read is the worshiping the image of the that he has built, or dying if you don't, and then the 7-year breakdown, we have concealed concealed in the story. Can you see it? We have concealed in the story of Daniel in Babylon an actual revelation found in the New Testament about the Antichrist, the 10 kings, killing those who will not worship the image of the beast, Revelation chapter 13, and later a 7-year tribulation, which is a picture of Nebuchadnezzar's breakdown. Now, there's probably some of this that we're going to go into in more detail in just a moment. So let's look at the first major prophetic dream. All right, in chapter 1, Nebuchadnezzar has invaded Jerusalem and Judea and taken young men captive. In chapter 1, he's destroyed the temple, he's destroyed Jerusalem, he's brought all the temple vessels and sacred furniture back to the area of Babylon and placed them in his temples there to his idol gods. Chapter 1, there are Daniel and his three companions that have been trained for 3 years now sitting at the king's table. And in chapter 1, he's trying to be sure that the Chaldean culture is put inside of these Hebrew young boys so they can be his voice or his mouthpiece when dealing with the Jewish people. Now, here we go. In chapter 2, this is where it gets interesting, that Nebuchadnezzar has a dream one night and he can't remember the dream, so he threatens to kill everybody if somebody, including his wise men, don't tell him the interpretation of the dream. Well, they called on Daniel, and Daniel began to pray at night, and God gave Daniel the entire revelation of this particular dream. And I'm going to go to this image over here in just a minute, this metallic image, and explain this to you after I read this verse. Here we go. O King, you, O King, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. The image's head was of gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thigh of brass, its legs of iron, its feet partly iron and partly clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floor. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the entire earth. Wow, what a dream. So here's what happened. We have here what is considered to be one of the great prophetic dreams of the Bible. And I have this image made to try to match a little bit of what we think Nebuchadnezzar's dream was like. Now, when you look at the interpretation of the dream, and it interprets itself, by the way, the head of gold was Babylon, the first empire of Bible prophecy. And then we discover that following the Babylonians came the Medes and the Persians. Notice there are two arms. One arm represents the Medes, one arm represents the Persians, and they are represented by silver. Now, in a moment, we'll tell you why these particular metals are used. And then we come to the third one, and that is the hips of brass. And this represents the empire that took over the Medes and Persians, which was Alexander the Great or the Grecian Empire. Now, following the Grecian Empire, you had legs of iron, and these legs of iron are absolutely the Roman Empire. But if you notice, these legs actually end up becoming two, and Rome ended up being split between the east and the west, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And you come down to the very, very end of days to the feet, and the feet are part clay, and they're part iron, and then there are 10 toes on the feet, and your biblical interpretation is that at the very, very end of days, there are going to be 10 kings. Now, five of them have to be from the east, and five of them have to be from the west if we continue to effectively and correctly interpret what this image represents. So this was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Now, let me talk to you about these particular empires. Notice they rule in order. He had them exactly down. Had them exactly down perfectly. They rule in order from Babylon all the way to Media Persia, all the way to Greece, all the way to Rome, all the way to the end of days. Now, what I'd like to do is look at these empires of where they affected Israel and the Jewish people, okay? The head of gold, Babylon, what did they do? They destroyed the temple and took the Jews captive. Then after them were the chest and arms of silver, the Media Persians. What did they do? They allowed the Jews to return, take all of their treasures back, and rebuild Jerusalem and the temple under the decree of Cyrus. Then following that was the Grecian Empire. What did they do? Well, the temple was eventually defiled by a man from the Seleucid dynasty called Antiochus Epiphanes. And for 42 months, he defiled the temple. He defiled Jerusalem. He offered a pig on the altar. And that's where the story of the Maccabees comes in, that you probably heard about Hanukkah and the Maccabees. It comes in during this time frame. So there was a real defilement by Antiochus Epiphanes, who was actually a type of the Antichrist that we begin to read about in history. Then following that were the legs of iron. That was Rome. Now, the Romans in 70 AD destroyed destroyed the temple. They destroyed Jerusalem. They took the Jews captive and they took all the treasures of the temple and carried them back to Rome. Then we come to the what we call the split on the legs, which is the east and the west. Rome was eventually split between the east and the west. And then we come down to the latter part, which is the feet, which are part iron and part clay, and the 10 toes. Now, in the book of Daniel, when you read Daniel 2, he talks about 2 feet and 10 toes. So the 2 feet are a part iron and clay, and then we have 10 toes, which are part ceramic, clay, and iron. I believe it's very likely that the 2 feet of iron and clay represent communism, the iron curtain of communism, and democracy, the clay of democracy. So democracy is the clay, communism is the iron. Guess how long it ruled? 70 years. Just like the Babylonians were in control for 70 years, communism ruled the world until the Jews were free to leave Russia for 70 years, 1917 to 1987. Now we come to the 10 toes, which are the final 10 kings. What will they do? They will persecute Israel and the Jewish people. So communism held the Jewish people in bondage in all the communist nations. They couldn't get visas. I mean, it cost you an arm and a leg to try to get a visa, but they refused to let people leave the countries because if they opened the doors, everybody would have wanted to leave these countries years ago. And so we see the communist, the iron of communism, the clay of democracy for 70 years. And then we're coming to the end of days where there's going to be 10 toes of iron and clay again. And I believe, again, we'll probably bring this out later, that the clay is democracy. But this time in the end of days, the iron is Islam. It's the iron of Islam because iron represents fighting and war. Now, what I'd like to do is show you the metal that's on the metal. And then the empire. I'm going to give you the estimated time it ruled, the empire ruled, how long it ruled. And we're going to talk about the area of the world that it represents. The head of gold is Babylon, which ruled from 606 BC to approximately 538 BC. It ruled what is today Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Armenia, Israel, Jordan, and Egypt. Following them were the Medes and Persians with the chest and arms of silver. They ruled from 538 BC to about 330 BC. They ruled Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Afghanistan, Libya, and Pakistan. So they expanded their empire to 127 provinces, according to the book of Esther. Following the Medes and Persians came Alexander the Great with the Greeks, represented by the thighs of brass. 330 BC to 146 BC, they ruled Iran, Iraq, Greece, Northern Africa, Turkey, all the way to the edge of Afghanistan, Pakistan, toward the edge of India, and also the northern part of Africa. So Alexander the Great definitely expanded the empire toward Egypt and to Libya, to the northern horn of Africa as well. Then we come to the Roman Empire, the two legs of iron. They ruled around the Mediterranean Sea area. They expanded to the west, to Spain, and to Britain, and to France, all through Italy. And so the Roman Empire was just all over the Mediterranean Sea area, all the countries there. And it did include, of course, Lebanon, and included Israel, and included Syria, etc. Then we come to 146 BC to 476 AD, when the strength of the Roman Empire was ruling. But then it was divided in about 476 AD. And again, history, divides us at different time paints. Some people will give this date, some will give a later date, because some start with when the decisions start being made to divide, and some will take it all the way to the actual date of the division. So we're just using the rough date here kind of to talk about when this happened. But in about 476 AD, the split began between what was called the western part of Rome in the eastern part of Rome. Now, the western part was controlled by Rome, Italy, and the eastern part was controlled by a city that Emperor Constantine had built, which was called Constantinople. Today, it's known as Istanbul, Turkey. Then at the end of days, you're going to have 10 toes, which are iron and clay. And again, these are 10 kings, but 5 of them have to be west from the western branch. 5 of them have to come out of the east. The reason I say that is because those two legs go all the way to the end of days. And one of those is Rome. Let's say it this way. One of those would be the nation of Turkey. One of those legs would be the nation of Italy. And so you have an east and west division. Even the whole thinking of that part of the world is east and west. You have the west, you have the east. They still talk about the west and the east, even to this day in that part of the world. So that division continues at the end of days, but there are some kings coming out of those empires, a coalition of nations that's going to come out of those empires at the end of day, the area of these previous empires, I should say. And they're going to align themselves with the biblical Antichrist, the Antichrist of Bible prophecy. Now, According to Daniel chapter 2, 34 and 35, and also we can read Jesus using this reference in Matthew 21, 42, there's coming a stone that is not cut out with hands, like a mountain that comes crashing in on this image. And when all of a sudden it crashes in on this image collapses. And it says the gold, the silver, brass, and iron, and the clay are all just crumbled together. And that is the return of Christ when Christ returns on earth. He is the stone that the builders rejected, the chief cornerstone of the house of God. And he will come back at the end of days. And when he does, he will take over the kingdoms of this world. And the kingdoms of this world will become the kingdoms of our God. Now, I got to ask you a question. We're in Daniel chapter 2, and we're talking about the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. So here's the question. Why were these particular metals used in this dream of King Nebuchadnezzar? Was there somebody that understood these metals? Was there something already known about these metals? Why was gold? Why was silver? Why was brass? Why was iron used? What was there about all of these particular metals that God allowed Nebuchadnezzar? First of all, no, it's in the form of a man. He didn't just see metals stacked on top of each other. He didn't see a pile of gold, a pile of silver. It is an image of an actual man. Now, here's what I want to share with you. Among the ancient Persians, there was a belief that of seven levels of heaven that were identified with seven different metals. Let me say it again. Among the ancient Persians, there was a belief that heaven had seven layers, all represented by seven metals. The first was lead, the second was tin, the third level became copper, the fourth iron, the fifth was a mix, and the sixth was silver, and the seventh heaven was gold. Now, there are early ancient beliefs among some of the religions of seven levels of heaven, because that belief originated a long time ago. But oddly enough, the Persians placed the different levels of heaven with different types of metal. Now, in the 8th century B.C., the Greek poet Hesiod, from 750 to 650 B.C., divided humanity up into five stages. The first consisted of, now watch this, he divided humanity up into five stages. This is the 8th century B.C. poet, okay? Watch this. Now, remember, the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar invaded Judea in 606 B.C., and then, of course, the way we time it, we count backwards into, you know, to 586, etc. So he finally takes over Judea, destroys the temple, and brings all the gold back. So in other words, this idea was known back in the time of the Babylonians. The first level of humanity was gold, the second silver, the third is bronze. The fourth is called heroic, no metal to correspond to it, and the fifth was iron. Now, what is really odd is if this would have been known back in that day, and if it would have been, basically, that humanity is divided up into all of this, what if Nebuchadnezzar knew that? What if that's the reason why God used this particular metal? Because the Babylonians were already familiar with this idea that humanity was going to go through these stages. Remember me saying earlier that God always used symbolism that the people of that day were familiar with. And these metals would have been metals also that everybody in that day would have been familiar with.
Does prophetic symbolism of beasts and horns confuse you? Do you question what is coming and how it impacts you? Perry's prophetic offer is a detailed teaching from the apocalyptic book of Daniel, Unsealing the Daniel Cipher, a 2-DVD, 4-hour prophetic series using maps, charts, graphics, and props, with numerous scriptures to illustrate this urgent right now teaching. Many of your complicated questions will be answered after viewing this series. Perry unlocks the concealed cipher in the book of Daniel, linking it with the book of Revelation. Perry explains Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar's visions and dreams, which revealed the future. He will detail the Antichrist symbolism, his headquarters, and formation of a final kingdom. Perry also explains which nations will eventually fall and how frightened citizens will flee their country. He will list and expound upon numerous individual plots and plans of the future beast system. Learn the nations that will suffer the most when Daniel's visions are unsealed on the earth. Discover the identity of the 10 horns and the nations that unite as a dangerous force at the time of the end. Receive new understanding as Perry explains the meaning of specific Aramaic and Hebrew words. See how the West and East will be divided and how Islam and Christianity come into play. Understand how the Antichrist will arise from one of four nations as described in Daniel's vision. Perry explains the dream of the tree stump, which most ministers seldom teach. Discover these insights and so much more. This teaching is a spiritual investment into life-changing knowledge. The offer 2DV101 is available for a donation of $30 or more, which helps keep Manifest coming to you each week. Order now by calling 1-888-21-BREAD. That's 1-888-212-7323. Or go online to perrystone.org. You can also order the 2DVD set by writing and sending a check to Perry Stone Ministries, P.O. Box 3595, Cleveland, Tennessee 37320. This entire teaching is also available as video on demand by visiting our website. We look forward to hearing from you today.
Give me your undivided attention for about 2 minutes. First of all, do not forget the offer. 2 DVDs. This is all illustrated. Scriptures come on the screen, charts, maps, etc. You're going to enjoy learning from the book of Daniel what's about to happen in your future and in our future, okay? Again, give me your attention for just a moment. These are some places we're going to be coming to. The Meadow Church, Maryville, Tennessee, on Sunday, June the 30th, all day. If you're in the Knoxville area, you may want to join me for that. Again, Maryville, Tennessee, the Meadow Church, June the 30th. Then our big conference in Louisville, Kentucky at Belltown Road, the Evangel World Prayer Center. That is Thursday night, all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Two services on Saturday, Friday and Saturday, I should say. And that's in Louisville, Kentucky, hosted by Bob Rogers. And I'm coming loaded with brand new messages that I've never preached before. Altar services are fantastic. You've got to be a part of that. If you can drive in and stay with us or get there as many services as you can there in Louisville, Kentucky. And we also have added this. This is a church that we had to postpone till a later date because of the revival that broke out in Gainesville, Georgia. We're coming on July 27th and 28th to Harvest Worship Center in Stuart, Virginia. And this is the rebooking of that meeting that we had planned. I appreciate the pastor. He allowed us to move the meeting to a later date in order to keep the Gainesville revival going on. And of course, August is Texas. We've got Christ Temple Church. So perrystone.org is where you can get the itinerary. Perry Stone Ministries Facebook page. You have to put ministries in there. You can stay in touch with our updates that way. The YouTube channel, of course, is doing quite well. And we have a lot of brand new. We do at least two, maybe three a week, new ones, at least two, maybe three. So you want to check that out if at all possible. And do not forget the Awaken America Conference, October 1 through 5. That's a Tuesday through a Saturday. Pam's Fall Festival on Saturday, honoring the veterans. Lance Walnell, Mary Morella, Jensen Franklin, Joseph Z, and myself. That registration will be up before long. So be watching out for that in October. God bless you.